Hey guys, welcome back to another installment of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Happy to be back. We got an awesome episode for you today. So let's get real quick into the sponsors and then get this thing started. Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, in the old bank building. One of my favorite craft breweries to go take a visit to. Go hang out, play some cards, grab a pint. Just an awesome place to go visit. So if you're interested, go grab a beer and put in the craft in craft beer again. May 3rd, come out and paint an etch growler or a pint glass, $30 per person, 7 p.m. Go check out the Manskirt page. They also are putting together a Cinco de Mayo celebration and releasing a top secret beer. So go check out Manskirt. Go check out Joe Fisher in his Manskirt and give them some love on social media. Now, we are also sponsored by Demented Brewing. Demented Brewing is just an awesome brewery in Middlesex, New Jersey. So if you're doing a beer tour, make sure you stop at Demented Brewing. They have 16 different tap handles, an amazing tap room, barrel programs if you're into that, sour programs if you're a sour guy. Just a really awesome brewery to go visit. They just released Grim Reaper, their black IPA with Carolina Reaper peppers on tap in their tasting room. And this Friday, they're going to be releasing Villa, their Belgian wit on tap in the tasting room. So make sure you go check out Demented Brewing. Insanely flavorful ales. Now, Wolf Nation, that stands for Wake Up Live Free Apparel, the world's next hottest and biggest designer brand. No matter what your goals are in life, as long as you are pursuing them, Wolf Nation is the brand for you. Go check out their Instagram, and they're taking their direct orders, DM them. They're putting in all sorts of orders for hats and shirts and clothes. Go check out their products. They got hats, bags, mugs. They're taking pre-orders all week. So, and go check out their new website at wolfnation.rocks. Wolf Nation, wake up, live free. Susan Robb is a woman out of Toronto, Canada. Susan works with senior executives in leadership development and also runs a business as a speaker agent for some pretty cool speakers who we've had a bunch on the show. Susan also works with a gal named Kim Ward from Wisconsin, and Kim was also a guest on our show a few months back. Susan and Kim work tirelessly advocating and raising money to inspire and empower a group of women and kids in Nepal. So far, their efforts have raised enough money to put all 14 kids into school for the very first time and have helped a group of ladies start a sewing business making quilts. 13 quilts have already been made, shipped, and sold in 4 countries, and all proceeds go right back into the Nepal outreach program for their next phase of sustainability. So go check out their GoFundMe/Vimla, V-I-M-L-A, and also go say hi to Susan Robb on Twitter, R-O-B-B. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Every week we host trivia all over the state of New Jersey. So if you're in the state or you live here, come on by at beer bars and breweries. You can win free prizes to the breweries and some craft beer prizes. So it's just a good night out. So that's Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right, this week we have one of my favorite guests returning for his third time, and that is Tom Verney. You may have seen him on CNN or a bunch of different news networks, but Tom was a NYPD officer for over 2 decades. He's also openly gay and just one of the best voices, very smart, very educated, and I think he brings one of the important viewpoints that you don't get to hear too often. So with that, my buddy Tom Verney, enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is Tom Verney, your favorite retired NYPD detective. You are listening to me on Verbal Shenanigans. You can catch me occasionally on HLN Headline News, as well as CNN, discussing all things law enforcement and crime and mayhem. Thanks for listening.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Me. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another installment of the podcast. I know I get very used to saying installment of the podcast, but welcome back. Coming off an awesome episode where we went to Hawaii with Dave Kalama and Terry Kirby and all these Hawaiian fixtures, I should say. Dave Kalama is a big wave surfer. He was a wind surfer. Everything's surfing. Foil boarder, stand-up paddle boarder. So a very cool episode. So let's get this going. Let's go down to the Georgia Peach himself. Give Berlew a call here. Mike Berlew.
Keep going.
Oh, hey.
I was enjoying Nugget. This should be the whole episode. Just Mike Berlew doop 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 song.
I was going to say, maybe like as I kind of figure out this production a little bit, maybe we'll have like a Berlew call song. Because it's like, you know, we don't. Really, you're not sitting here for the intro anymore, so maybe get your own, like, you know, your own theme song.
Mike Berlew, we're coming to you!
Now you ruined
something
it.
Something like that.
Now you ruined it.
Well, that's the hook of the song. I mean, you'll start off with a good beat, and, you know, you have the background singers, and then, wham, you just put that wave in there, and it's just, you know, we're off to the races.
you're selling me. You just used wham and off to the races in one sentence. Any other trademark sayings you want to throw in there?
If first you don't succeed, try again.
Oh, good. Don't throw rocks in glass houses.
Yeah.
So anyway, how's it going there, buddy? How is Georgia now that you you did a quick stint in Jersey and flew back?
Yeah, you can kind of feel the traffic after a 14-hour drive, you know?
Did it suck horribly?
It's just one of those, when you're first going through it, it's like new job, new place. You're like, all right, I'm getting used to it. It's not like the old place, just humming along, whatever. After you traveled for 14 hours through the weekend, and I really didn't have that much of a break on Monday when I came. Now I'm back to the old Jersey. What the hell? You move? Why you hit your brake? Why is this? Why is that?
So are you seeing no real traffic in Georgia?
No, you see traffic. Like, you pretty much see it all the time. I would say I'm probably kind of getting used to it, and it's kind of not annoying because, one, it's not at a job that I absolutely despise, and two, just like the atmosphere of being in a new place. I mean, I'm basically driving past, you know, the heart of Atlanta, Georgia, so I can't be
hot
terribly
Atlanta.
Shocked that there's truck.
Has anybody referred to it as hot Atlanta since you've been down there?
Locals have not used it yet, but I'm just waiting for it. Or maybe I'll just get it from anybody who's commenting on Facebook, you know, that first 98-degree day, you know, oh, you know why that is. You know where you are.
Well, I mean, since you left Jersey, basically, it has not been nice for longer than, like, not even a 24-hour period. It basically has not been nice for longer than a 12-hour period. It's been still cold, still. Jersey is mourning your loss.
Well, there was one good day, and guess when that was?
The day you came
back. When
the old
Burles flew right in, yeah. I'm like, this is my gift to you, my former state. Enjoy it, but I will take it away from you.
I will never not hate that you refer to yourself as the Burles in third person.
I don't care. I really couldn't even give one ounce of a rat.
You should write like a autobiography, but in third person.
Purely in the third person.
The first ever.
That was when the Burles figured out something needed to be done.
The first ever autobiography written in third person.
That day, the Burles realized he was going somewhere in life. He was making something for the Burles. And that's why everybody loves the Burles.
Oh, God. Did you see that Andre the Giant documentary?
Pretty good. Unfortunately, I have not. I've heard nothing but good reviews. I'm probably going to have to steal somebody's HBO to go password to try it out. But I think I got free AT&T. I just went up to our free HBO because I upgraded my AT&T to unlimited usage. I think it said something I get HBO for free. So
yeah, pretty cool story. A couple things I never. Well, I mean, you hear all the. It's fun hearing all the guys talk about his legendary drinking. Like, one of them was like, I kid you not, like, you know, he would be pouring bottles of wine before his matches. And then, like, after his matches, he'd go out and have, like, you know, five or six bottles of wine. And then one guy said that he once sat there and watched him drink 125 beers.
Yeah, that's one of the more legendary ones there. For what I remember, like just hearing Andre the Giant stories, I forget the wrestler's name, but he talked about like when Andre would go out, he always wanted people around him that he liked because he was in so much pain, he was so miserable. He hated dealing with people like staring at him and doing all that. So anytime he'd go out, he'd go out with a buddy. And he talked about some legendary night where, kind of like you said, Andre just kept on drinking wine by the case and beer after beer after beer, and you got to go along with him. And he was like, oh, I'm just so ossified drunk and all, I can't handle it. So he waited for a moment, like Andre, he was distracted or something, whatever, but he basically got into a cab, went back to the hotel to sleep it off. And he said, like, 2 hours later, he just hears the
there's the remix. I may hang up on Berlo. It always comes at the best time. 2 hours later, you just hear. But yeah, let me call him. Let me call Berlo back here. Let me call him on his Google machine.
Our weekly cutoff intermission point.
Yeah. Back to the remix. You pulled the Dave Kalama there, where you were like, and you just hear, like it dropped out right at the the climax of the story.
But to finish it off, so he basically said after a few hours later, he just hears somebody kick down his hotel door, and it's Andre, and he walks right in, and he just grabs him and picks him up and he goes, you left me, big guy, we're not done yet, and pulled him out and made him drink for another 3 hours with him.
Yeah, there was a story on there. Andre got so loaded that he passed out in like the bottom floor of a hotel, and they're like, no one's getting this guy up. So they just basically just left this giant in the middle of like the lobby, and people just like had to walk over this drunk giant. And then they were doing the Princess Bride stuff, and they were saying that he was just loaded on that most of the time. And like, you know, there was just this drunk giant. At one point, he was on like cables and stuff too, like just swinging around a drunk giant. So pretty funny. But they're just talking about how much he drank and everything. He drank the same amount that my ex drank, which is pretty astonishing.
That would have been a great contest, Andre the Giant between versus your ex.
Yeah. That
would have been the best WrestleMania ever.
It's so long. It's taking so long. How are they still standing? But yeah, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. I wanted to tell you a funny story. It's not even a story. I think I lost us another guest.
Oh, good for you.
We could add this to the long list of, let's see, you pissing off firemen, me not realizing there's an Eastern Standard Time in Australia. You said someone else you pissed off recently, right?
It was another fire person. It was Ferent. Yeah, it was a forensic fire expert. And I just thought, all right, that's kind of curious. What kind of work you do into that? I mean, I didn't piss him off, but he basically emailed me back, I respectfully decline your offer.
Oh, so I was, we still might have this person, so I'm not going to use names. But so I was trying to get this rapper on.
Okay.
He was a relatively successful. I've sang his songs on the podcast before, so that's why I want to get him on. And I'm emailing back, and like I guess his people, it says, you know, blah, 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 blah. We'll get back in touch with you from Joss, J-A-S. I thought it was like Jaws or whatever.
And you like, got Jay-Z?
Yeah, yeah. And then I email back like, hey, any update on whether or not we can, you know, make this happen or not? Because I had to send them their, our numbers and, you know, all that fun stuff. And emails back like, yeah, we're going to meet with him tonight and throw some ideas at him. And if he wants to do it, we'll let you know. I said, oh, thanks, man. No problem. That's great. Just keep me updated, bro, or something like that. And I get the email back. Will do. FYI, I'm a female.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So I call. I said, thanks, man. Thanks, bro, or something along those lines. So I would be surprised if we went forward on that one.
Okay. So was the name of this person like
J-A-S.
Okay, so
maybe it's like Jasmine.
Is that even a name?
I don't know.
I guess Jasmine would be short for
like
I mean,
Jazz. Maybe that's how you'd call her Jazz, something like that. But yeah,
I don't,
so I might have.
It's not really a fully defined name.
That's what I was thinking. Now that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But you know, I might have lost that one off the hook. So another one.
Another one bites the dust.
So we got a couple minutes before our guest. I guess since we're talking about watching things, the Walking Dead finale. Yes, there are people that still watch it. We're two.
Still got good numbers. It's just falling from what it was.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've been down in the ratings pretty bad. I didn't really like it. It was okay. I thought the part with the mullet guy. What's his name?
Eugene
was pretty cool with the guns going off. I didn't really. I you know, you thought they hinted at it last time, but I thought maybe, you know, he'd take a turn, so that was pretty cool. But the whole Maggie and Jesus and Daryl, like, ha, 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 we're turning on Rick. It was very, like, I feel like maybe with some build-up and a little bit more, like, development, that kind of scene would have made sense. But, like, I don't know. It seems like they crammed that in there, like, I feel like there should have been little things along the way that kind of suggested that. And the Jesus thing I don't get. He's the guy sitting there telling everyone not to kill anyone.
Well, if you recall, Jesus was the one that recruited them for the hilltop to specifically go after and kill Negan to protect them.
Right.
So that's why he has a past of wanting Negan to die. He doesn't want others to die, but he wants, because he's basically saying he's come by, we didn't fit all his needs, he just killed our people in front of us, we need help. That's why Rick was recruited and all of them. They went to that one outpost and they killed everybody there, and that's what set up the saviors going after them, which killed Abraham and Glenn.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess I can get behind the idea of like some inner turmoil going on, but I hated the way it was set. It was just like dropped in this like mysteriously dark scene. Like, like I felt like there should have been like spooky music playing or like bum bum bum. Just a little bit of like some disagreements along the way. Not just like one, like first off, him slitting Negan's throat and then putting it back together is I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, I kind of didn't understand it. For what I found out in the comics, it was kind of the same thing. Now in the comics, they kind of show him stabbing him in the side of the neck,
yeah,
and basically yelling at the saviors, I'm gonna let him bleed out, if give up and I'll save him. And that's kind of how it's set up in the comic books, how Negan was still alive and they jailed him. But yeah, when you go full front on into the front of the throats, and considering the guy who fixed them is like a semi-doctor. He's not like everything from what I said. He knew some medical stuff, but not exactly like a full-on, I studied medicine for 20 years. That's kind of hard for you to explain to me, how it's just like, all right, I'll just stitch up this guy's neck in the middle of a field with no clean instruments whatsoever, and he'll be fine.
Yeah. See, I had thought that episode was a great opportunity to get rid of a ton of characters we don't like, or a ton of characters we don't care about. Everyone's been complaining, like, no one cares. Like, get back to the original people. That's a great way to trim the fat. You know, maybe kill, like, one major character, but kill a bunch of other, like, you know, in a battle, in a war. People die, you know, people when people battle. That would have been a great way. And it's just like, oh, again, like, look at that big horde over there. We better get it together. Like, it's just like... I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I think they somewhat accomplished it in the sense that it looks like they finited the story where it's like, all right, you're going back to your the Savior Village, and you're just going to be there, and would not have to worry about extending your story. But yeah, it probably would have been better off with just a full on carnage and kind of dealing back with that, and it might have made more sense with after the carnage where Rick's like, I'm saving Negan because Carl asked for it, where everybody's like, well, what are you talking about, what's going on, blah blah blah, and then add more turmoil. Unfortunately, I'm saying the same thing I've said for a couple years now. They're setting themselves up where they have the opportunity to do this right, but they always seem to kind of trip on themselves. I will say, Fear the Walking Dead, where they brought Morgan over and they introduced a couple new characters. I haven't watched it in 2 years. That was a good episode, but I will also say it was a good episode because the original characters didn't show up till 2 minutes left in the premiere. So it's all a question of what they do with this.
Well, again, it's a show. I mean, to me, we've had this discussion many times on the podcast, but to me, it's just the last three seasons or so, it's been really hard. If these were the first three seasons, I don't think anybody would watch the show. It's just that so many people are invested in it. We want to see what happens to these main characters that we've enjoyed over the years. But, you know, it's just it needs a shot of adrenaline, and I can't figure out what to do. But I think it would start with getting rid of some of the fat, like getting rid of some of the characters no one cares about.
Yeah, and somebody brought up, they brought up a good point. You look at Game of Thrones, and you can tell by their writing, they had a story arc ready for 4, 5, 6, 7 years.
I mean, I say it all the time. Game of Thrones has a million characters, and we pretty much know what's going on with every single one of them, no longer than, like, at max, like, 3 episodes, like, until you see them again. So.
Yeah, and they're showing they had their story arc. They knew what they were going to do. Whereas you look at Walking Dead, you're kind of saying, I think you're pulling it out of your rear end. It's like, all right, that season's over. There's somebody at the beach. There's somebody at the beach.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I think it's time to get to our guest. This guest, this is his third time on the podcast, and I hope to continue having him on a bunch of times in the future, because for several reasons. I've said it before, I think he is one of the most important voices that we've had on this podcast, just because of who he is, some of the different demographic he hits, and that is Tom Verney. Tom Verney is, you can see him very frequently on CNN, but let me give you a little background on Tom. Tom worked for close to 25 years as a detective, NYPD. Tom is also a gay man, so which you don't get those two together anyway. But he's very interesting because he's very progressive as far as where it comes to police stuff, but he's also very supportive. So he combines a lot of viewpoints, and he's one of my favorite people to talk to. So I'm excited to get him back on.
Yeah, it's definitely. I missed the first one, but the second interview we did, really interesting man. I mean, it just seems like the conversation flows very easily talking to him, you know? I mean, any subject that comes up, it's not like a one-word answer. It's very thought out, if you will.
So, like, Tom, I hope to have Tom. It's kind of like, you know, get him on twice a year, every 6 months or so. There's a lot going on, obviously, in politics and police work and whatnot. So, without further ado, let's get Tom Verney back on the cast. Here we go.
Greetings.
Verney, hold on 1 second. Let me merge Mike into this call real quick. 1 second. Mike, are you there?
I'm here, Scotty.
Perfect. Tom, you hear Mike?
I can hear him. Greetings.
I apologize for that. But, you know, you got to have a co-host. Tom, thank you so much for joining us once again. I was just saying to Mike, I kind of love having you on because I've said it before. I really think that you bring a perspective and an important voice that, you know, yes, you are on CNN and whatnot and have some, you know, things to hear, but it's not you bring a perspective that I think should be heard quite often. So thank you for giving us a few minutes again.
Yeah, not a problem. I always want to bring a bipartisan, bisexual, bipolar perspective to whatever we
while riding a bicycle too
for the amazing. for
while
the bison
riding a bicycle.
For the bicentennial. Tom, last we had checked in with you, it's been probably about 6 months or so, something like that. I would love to get an update on your health. You were going through some health scares, some relating to what you thought was working within Ground Zero and whatnot. Can you give us an update on how you're feeling and what's going on?
Oh yeah. I terminated my pregnancy. Other than that,
thank God we don't need another one of you.
A fatal cloning accident. What happened was about 5 years ago, after Hurricane Sandy, had lost my voice, and my sergeant at the time had bronchitis, and I thought perhaps I caught it, and I didn't really think anything of it. So I went to my doctor, and he sent me to an ENT in Chelsea, in Manhattan. So I went to see him. He did a scope, and I don't know if you've ever had this done, but they basically stick a fiber optic tube up through your nose, and it comes down into your throat to have a look-see. So they did that and found that my both vocal cords were covered with two things. One is something called leukoplakia, which is a plaquing of the vocal cords, like a whitish plaquing. And then there were a series of polyps that were also on the vocal cords. So they when the doctor says wow, that's usually about the time that I start to soil myself.
Wow is not the diagnosis. Yeah. You want wow is not
not the best. Yeah. Bedside manner. I gotta say.
Well, what's funny is that that whenever I have been scoped before with this in this process, in the past when the news has been good news, they give me the good news before they pull the scope out. Anytime I've gotten any bad news, it usually pulls the scope out first and then takes a deep breath. And you know, so but the first time this happened, the scope was in and he said wow, and I was kind of like, I couldn't say anything because I really had no voice at the time anyway. So he goes okay, so what I'm looking at here is what we call leukoplakia, and I'm looking at a series of polyps. He goes, what I believe we should do as quickly as possible is to do a laser surgery where you get knocked out, you're intubated, and they go down with a laser, and they basically laser your vocal cords and subsequently take a biopsy of what is in there to check it out, which we did.
Right.
So they did that. The recovery time for that was 30 days of no speaking. And I don't know if anyone's ever had to not speak for that long, but to not have the ability to, I never even thought about it up until this happened. Not being able to speak is a big deal, especially when your career involves using your voice. So so that was tough, but they did the biopsy. The biopsy came back showing precancerous these precancerous lesions. So they said, okay, well, we're lucky we got it when we did. Had we not caught it when we did, it would have started to turn into throat cancer. And I guess by virtue of logistically where the vocal cords are, I guess it could easily spread into the lymph nodes and become lymphatic cancer, I guess. Not being a doctor, of course, but so they got that all out. And everything was actually pretty cool for about 4.5 years. Like, I was getting checked every 6 months, 4.5 years, everything was fine. Last June, I went for a checkup, which was a couple months overdue at the time. And the placking that I had the first time had returned. So they said, okay, we're going to bring you in, do another laser procedure. I said, okay. This time, though, they only did one side and not the other, because the other side didn't have that much on it. So they did the one side. I said, okay, we're going to check you in a couple months, see how that side is healing, and then we'll see how bad the other side is getting, or if it's staying the same. Went back a couple months later. They said, okay, the side we did was healing okay. The side that had some stuff on it is looks like it's starting to get a little bit more, so we're going to keep an eye on it. We'll see what happens in December. December comes, they check it again. They said, okay, we definitely want to bring you in and do another laser surgery, which I had done in March. Was it March? Yes, it was in March. So we're about, I guess I'm about 5 to 6 weeks out from the last procedure. And so, yeah, I'll go back in about a month.
All right.
To get re-scoped. And we'll see what it looks like. I don't have my full voice. I know it might sound okay. My main speaking voice is pretty much there.
Right.
There's an entire upper register which is missing. So I'm curious as to why that is. That didn't really happen last time. So, which no one really hears unless I hear it when I'm singing.
No, but it's just you said, when you're singing myself, yes, you know, when you're singing yes, it's really brutal.
Yeah, Tom, you want to get a checkup? That Love Shack rendition was horrible. I gotta say, sorry.
Right,
you
exactly.
Gotta go see a doctor.
Yeah, no, nobody needs. I never do karaoke. I've friends of mine do karaoke. I don't get near this stuff because I just don't want to clear out the bar. You know.
Yeah. Well, I want to say, Mike, you know that common cold you had, I also heard the diagnosis was not speaking for 30 days. So,
What? I'm going to let it ride. The world needs my voice, you know.
That's right.
Well, Tom, it sounds like you got a good perspective on it. And like at this point, it seems like you're at least, I don't know if used to is ever the word to really use, but at least you kind of know what to expect, and you kind of got at least a good perspective on it. So we're glad to hear that you're back and talking, at least, especially like you said, where your job is talking.
Yeah, I think the way they explained it to me was that so there's different variations of this scenario. One of which is like you'll get either public speakers or singers, like Adele had this had a similar version of this, where she developed either placking and or polyps on her vocal cords. They went in, did a laser surgery, and then she had to wait, of course, especially with her. I'm sure she waited the full length of time, which I did not. So then there's this version is, ironically, is a version that someone who is a long-term smoker would get.
Right.
Or someone who worked in a coal mine, or someone who is exposed to some sort of toxic soup, similarly to which many of us experienced down at Ground Zero. For those of us that were caught up in the dust cloud when the towers came down, as well as working on the pile for 4 to 5 weeks, which I was there every day. So that's the version that I have. It's similar to if I was a long-term smoker, which I never smoked a day in my life. So the irony is that my dad, who smoked for 55 years, didn't have this issue, but yet I, who never picked up a cigarette, have it.
Of course.
So it is what it Yeah, it is what it is. I don't really know what else to do with it. I could become really depressed about it and say, oh, this really totally sucks, especially after the tragic hair loss and the Rogaine rejection. But, like, what's the point? You know, like, where is it going to get me at this point?
You've got a good bald head, though. I got to say, you got a good bald head.
It's not a bad bald head.
If I was bald, it would be a problem. Like, my head is gigantic. It's too much of a distraction. You at least have a nice cylindrical, round kind of shape to your head.
Yeah, people compare me to Bruce Willis.
Yeah,
we look similar and our heads are similar. So yeah, so I guess that's not a bad thing.
No. I would be compared to, what was the monster in the Goonies? What was his name?
Something like that.
If it's not Clunk, I hope it is, because Clunk's a better name.
No, it rhymes with that. It's something in that area. I don't know the answer either. There you go.
Wow. All right. Well,
that's why we brought you on here, for your Goonies knowledge.
Yeah.
Or lack thereof, yeah.
Well, Tom, let's get into a serious subject here. Since the last time we talked to you, the current regime has gone out to get rid of transgenders in the military. And it's kind of a funny thing how it's the same regime that kind of says, you know, we got to respect the military. We got to do everything we can. We need every good person we can to make this country strong and wonderful. And at the same time go, oh, no, you guys aren't good enough. You're too expensive to take care of. What's been the reaction in the community? And has there been like a fight or a push to try to stop this?
Yeah, well, it depends on what part of the community you are referring to. I mean, I have friends of mine who are Trump. I do have some friends that are Trump supporters, and friends that are maybe questioning Trump supporters, but are definitely more conservative, and who were former service men and women. So their perspective is many of the more quote unquote conservative or right wing members. Their feeling is, well, they don't belong there. They have a mental illness, and it jeopardizes those who are there, and to treat their gender dysphoria and or to give them hormonal treatments and to pay for their potential sexual reassignment surgery if it goes that far is unwarranted. You know, and my feeling is that, of course, first of all, I mean, I don't think you have to be in the military to realize that they've always been there. They've been there. They weren't particularly, maybe they weren't out or open.
I mean, come on, guys who love uniforms and exercise, come on.
Right. Well, that explains the gay guys. But, the transgender folks. Yeah, so what's interesting about the transgender, the gender identity issue is that even within the lesbian, gay, bisexual community, there are many of those who are confused by it. So I, as an openly gay man or poorly practicing heterosexual,
heterosexual, you know, with slip ups.
Yeah, like I'm a failed heterosexual, apparently, by most biblical standards. Anyway, I mean, quite frankly, you know, I'm not of transgender experience,
right?
So I had to educate myself by those people who are of transgender experience. So when in 2008, I convened a group of about a dozen different LGBT organizations to meet with the Deputy Commissioner of Training for the NYPD to basically tear apart the three horrible, outdated pages of reading material that the recruits would be reading. And over a 6-month period, we rewrote, rewrote about 90% of that reading. And it went from 3 pages to 36 pages. And it was much more concise. It was much more up to date. It was in the current century. And they, you know, in which established a whole section on gender identity. And because up until that point, according to our procedures, a male officer searches a male prisoner and a female officer searches a female prisoner. But it was never defined how we arrived at them being male or female. It was always assumed that we arrived at that based on whatever their genitalia was.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had a penis, you were a guy. And if you had a vagina, you were a woman. And of course, now we know that that's not necessarily the case. There are people who physically stand before you with the parts and accessories of one gender and identify as something else. So I don't have an issue with transgender folks being in the military at all, because A, they've always been there in one form or another. I think they deserve, if you can get in there and pass basic training and pass whatever tests they throw at you, just like any job, you deserve the right to be there. And they deserve the same veterans benefits that any other veteran deserves. So I really don't see the big issue. And friends of mine, you know, who have known to have served with people who self-identified as transgender or self-identified as gay or lesbian, at the end of the day, didn't really have an issue with it. You know, there those who have an issue with people who are transgender wanting to serve in the military are the same people who have an issue with transgender people wanting to be police officers or fire, working the fire service or teachers or, they have a problem, period. Their transphobia transcends all professions. So it's not relegated just to that. They just have a problem with them because they don't understand. They don't understand because there's not a lot of education out there about it. So just like anything else, just as if you were a manager at Starbucks and you have a problem serving people who are black, or not letting them use the bathroom or not letting them sit in seats, there's something there that triggers that phobia. And a phobia is an irrational fear of something, right? So whether it be, a racial phobia or homophobia or transphobia, it's all the same. And it's all based on a lack of education.
Yeah.
And I think the president, it's kind of funny because, he came out during his campaign saying, oh, I'm the biggest ally to the LGBT community, as he held the rainbow flag upside down at one of his, one of his speeches he gave. And then he comes out and says things as he does in the maniacal way that he does things. And then it takes the Pentagon by surprise. They're kind of like, what? We didn't agree to that. And then he has to try to walk it back, as if, oh, well, you misunderstood what I said. We're like, no, you kind of said it the way you said it. We all got it.
No.
You're now the epitome of the left hand not speaking, to the right hand. So it's just embarrassing day after day. I just didn't know what to do with it anymore.
No, let me ask you. You have this, like I was thinking as you were talking. You have this interesting perspective. Not even perspective, but like where you are. You're put into two groups of people, right? You're a gay man, but you're also a NYPD officer. Now, I wanted to ask you with the Trump stuff, right? Now, here's a man that is inciting this, pro cop. We love our police officers and military, but then he's also the same guy that is getting a ton of backlash for his treatment of, gays and LGBT and those issues. It's got to be
federal law enforcement.
What was that? And federal.
He seems to like any law enforcement that's not investigating him.
Exactly.
So
100%. Well, I was going to.
Cops are great because they're not all up in his business, the FBI and every federal agency that's investigating all up in his spray tanned orange ass.
It's all fake, no though. It's all fake news. There's nothing's real.
There's nothing real.
But I wanted to ask you, so you get put into, I guess your whole life has kind of been, put into these different groups and whatnot, and you're able to kind of blend the have you been having a hard time, since he's gotten into office, or being able to kind of unite these groups, or being, what's the word I'm looking for? To being open to conversation with both sides, or do you get pigeonholed into one thing and then pigeonholed into the other? Like, is it hard being you in under this administration?
Well, it's hard being me just because of what I have to look at in the mirror every day. Yeah, yeah.
Transparent. But that was the word I was trying to think of. Transparent.
Genetically, it's hard to be me. Yeah. But what's funny is that so during, before, during, and after Trump took office, and my opposition to him, mind you, I was not a Hillary supporter. No. I had friends
me
who
neither.
Campaigned for her.
Nope.
Yeah, now, don't get me wrong. Do I feel she was qualified on paper to be president? Yes. Could she have stepped into the office and hit the ground running on day one with little on the job training? Yes. Do I think she had the balls to do it? Yeah. However, I think she was probably one of the worst candidates the DNC could have possibly
100%.
Run. 100%. And we saw the result of that when you have someone like Trump, who is probably the worst candidate the GOP ever could have run, won. So I was not a huge Hillary supporter. I do believe she's qualified for it. I do believe she could have run the country quite well with her experience in most areas anyway. But she was, Joe Biden, I would have been behind him 212%. I was advocating for John Kasich, who I felt was the only adult in the room.
Yep.
And had plenty of experience and no drama, no scandal. And he wasn't the most dynamic speaker and didn't raise all the dust that was kind of settled on the ground. He threw it up into the air like Trump did.
I don't think he got a Trump nickname either. Did he give him a nickname? Something John?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so, yeah. I think he... I don't remember him having a nickname like Little Marco or something like that.
Crooked Hillary and all of them.
Yeah, Crooked Hillary and whatever he called Jeb, whatever it was, jumping Jeb, whatever it was. Yes. So it's funny because the friends of mine who are Trump supporters, who I'm still friends with a few of them, they consider me a liberal, and friends of mine who are actually liberal consider me to be anywhere from a moderate
into the Klan, to being in the Klan.
Yeah, right. Like I'm a sheet hanging out behind my door. Yeah, and that's because I'm fiscally, I kind of lean conservative. I'm pro military, I'm pro law enforcement, I'm pro Second Amendment.
Right.
Although I think there's plenty of room for closing of loopholes and whatnot in light of what we've experienced in the last two decades. I'm not crazy about abortion, but if I was a legislator, I couldn't see myself legislating and telling a woman what to do with her body. So I fall on both sides of the aisle, depending on the issue you're talking about, which is why I coined myself as a moderate because of that. So I'm, I guess, more socially I lean left or socially almost leaning liberal, but I think economically and fiscally I lean more right. When it comes to protecting the homeland and all those kinds of butch things. So it makes my Facebook a war zone.
Sometimes I check in on your Facebook. I don't say a word. I just watch the magic happen in the comments section.
Mm. Yeah, it's just my Facebook is it's a disaster area. Yeah, and I've been unfriended by a few people. I've had to either unfollow or unfriend a few people that got particularly nasty. There have been occasions though, and what's interesting is that friends on both sides will say, how could you be friends with that person? It's so like uber liberal. How could you be friends with that guy? He's such a right wing nut,
Mm-hmm.
And there are times where we will talk about issues, and some productive dialogue actually happens.
Wait, so you're telling me you're able to talk reasonably and actually come to some conclusions?
I think at the end of the day, is that allowed today?
Is that a thing?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't seem that way anymore. It seems like we're, you know, I don't know what's coming first, World War III or the new Civil War.
Isn't it amazing when you talk with your friends, you realize how much you actually have in common with another human being? Isn't it amazing when you talk to someone?
Or don't. Yeah. Well, it's funny because friends of mine who I've known since I was in grade school, or especially some of the ones I used to hang out with in high school, a couple of them are kind of like, and then so the ones I used to hang out with in high school, and then let's say socially haven't hung out with them in let's say maybe 20 or 25 years. Having graduated high school almost 31 years ago, they're kind of like the ones that'll say, "What happened to you? Like your attitudes used to be really somewhat different than what they are now." And I said, "Well, I started reading some books. went to classes. I educated myself on some things since I was a dumbass back in the day."
You were so cool back in the day, man, though. I mean, you had your hair, you had your jean jacket, you were so cool. What the hell happened?
Cabaretis, yeah, I had those. Yeah, definitely not cool. What was funny was that back in the day, in high school, in particular, you would have like all these different cliques, right? You have the jocks and the burnouts and the metalheads and the well-to-do people and the poor saps and the artistic group. I never really belonged to one particular group. I was kind of meandered throughout all of the groups. So whatever that common thread is that I was able to find in all those groups, I kind of was lucky enough to find it. So the good thing about that is I would get invited to all the parties as the designated driver because I didn't drink. So I got to drive all my drunken stone friends home, which was fine. Good karma points for me. But, even back then, I guess I was able to tap into something where we may not necessarily agree on everything, and I was definitely not that great at sports, but yet I could hang out with the jocks. I was fairly artistic, and I took a lot of art electives, so I got to meet a lot of people there. I was not part of the AP group, but yet I was friends with some of the brainiacs. So I guess I was able to kind of bridge across into those groups without necessarily having to be one of them, but I could support those who were part of all those groups at the same time. So, in my young diplomatic early years,
you have to jump into one group. That's the rule. Everybody knows that. You have to stay with one group and nothing else.
It seems that way. At least, and that's the argument I have with my Trump supporting friends. It's like that's how polarized this has become. Is that if you agree with him, you support him, and you drink, the orangeade, or which is what you get when he sweats, or you're just wrong, and I don't get that. I don't understand. Because even by Republican standards, he doesn't really fit.
No,
a lot of what the Republican Party stands for.
Not at all.
I just don't get a blind faith,
Now, I wanted to ask you, there's a couple of things I wanted to ask you, but one of them I wanted to ask you was, you get brought on CNN very often to discuss anything, it seems like any kind of hot topic, whether it's police-related and whatnot. There's two things that really stand out to me. One of them is very, very recent, is that the whole Starbucks thing that happened recently. Where do you stand on that? What happened here? Now, I know a lot of these stories you know, it's the way that we get media coverage. You know, sometimes we see bits and pieces of something. We don't see the whole story. But what are your feelings on the Starbucks story? Like, what's going on right there?
Well, what I know of it is, and it seems clear that Starbucks, because I'm sure they're going to get sued, and rightfully so. But I think they're trying to get ahead of that. Because I just read something along the lines of, I think, May 29th
or
something
like that.
They're
closing like 8,000 stores. Yep.
Yeah, they're closing 8,000 stores to train all of their staff on either implicit bias, I guess, is the training that's going to be. Which is great. Okay, listen, that's fine.
Right.
I think that's great. Don't have a problem with that. It's kind of sucks that you have to have an incident similarly to the one that took place where it triggers that. I'm kind of surprised, actually. It's really, I wouldn't have expected, of all places, a Starbucks.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, like in the past, there were like situations with like Cracker Barrel or with the gay community, it's Chick-fil-A and you know, Papa John's. You know, there are companies that have voiced their concerns explicitly or implicitly about certain communities, right? So, and we've heard about those. And I think there was a piece that I was doing in one of my trainings through this company called Blue Courage, where they train cops around the country, which talks about how many billions and billions of dollars is spent every year, millions and or if not billions of dollars is spent every year by companies to settle lawsuits in which they have violated some either basic EEO policy or outright have done something outright racist or sexist or homophobic. And then they get sued and then they lose and then they pay out a lot of money. So, and that cost, of course, whether their insurance pays or whether they pay, that cost gets passed on to the consumer, of course, so they can mitigate that. So, but with Starbucks, it's kind of like, I think I'm still kind of just shocked that it's Starbucks of all places, because it seems like such a forward-thinking company, kind of like Google, you know. I wouldn't expect an incident like this to play out from, you know, from a Google or a company that's really kind of been with the times and really, I think, been at the forefront of being progressive and accepting of all. So that's it was a little disturbing that it came from there. You know, the cops that responded, I mean, I think some people initially, I think, were mad at the cops, and maybe some people still are. But I think initially the initial reaction from what I was hearing and seeing was that people were mad at the cops, that the cops arrested these guys, and that should have never happened. Yeah, I wasn't there, so my understanding of it is, you know, I mean, listen, the cops were called there because the manager called the police and said, you know, we have these two guys are in our store. They had whatever disagreement they had. They were asked to leave. It's the right of the business at that point, I guess, to refuse them service if they felt that they have done something to warrant them refusing the service. And now the cops are kind of putting this catch-22, like, okay, well, you know, sir, I'm sure it sounds to me as if the police were very professional. I don't think the police did anything that was unprofessional. It took any action that was illegal. They, I believe, to my knowledge, unless I could be wrong, and unless I'm missing a piece of the story, was that they expressed to the gentleman that they were called there because the manager called them there, and they were acting in a way that the manager wanted them to leave the store. Now at that point, they technically, now the police are saying we're asking you to leave the store, and they my understanding is that they refused to leave. And subsequently, if that, now you're getting into, it's now starting to get to a point where now you're contradicting what the officers are asking you to do. So like all these cases where now this is going beyond now your incident or your disagreement with Starbucks. This is now becoming a disagreement with the police. Mm-hmm. You know, and the police are not going to sit there and have this conversation all day. I mean, they have things to do. So that are way more pressing than than Starbucks twisting your nipples the wrong way. So it's and it's not even a matter of that. It's a matter of, you know, I'm not agreeing with what Starbucks did, and I totally side with the gentlemen that were there. I believe they have every reason to be upset with Starbucks,
mm-hmm.
not with the police. Okay, so you know, so basically, because when the police come, they don't want to have to be Starbucks bouncers. You know what I mean? They don't want to have to be, because this happens at Starbucks, it happens at McDonald's, it happens in all these different places where the police have to respond, where the management is asking people to leave, right, wrong, or indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
And now the cops have to play the role of bouncer. And when you ask someone to leave, I mean, this has happened to me 1,000 times. You ask somebody to leave, and they say, well, you know, we're not going anyplace. They say, well, sir, you at this point, you have to leave this establishment because they're telling you to leave, and now we are asking you to leave. So if you refuse to leave, if you refuse to follow the lawful order that we're giving you to vacate the premises, then now it becomes an issue where you're dealing with us. Not so. Forget about Starbucks at this point. Now it's us, right? Now you can leave, and if you want to take our names, you want to take our badges, if you want to, call us, if you want to suing them, and then call us into civil court and say, and we could testify that we showed up, and we could testify, you know, to our to what took place, you know, what conversation took place or argument took place between the manager and the gentleman. That's why I have no problem with that. And I don't think these cops would have had a problem with that either. But at some point, it got to a point where they gave them probably a number of warnings. And it's okay, listen, you know, if you don't leave now, you're going to force us to have to take you out of here in handcuffs for refusing to comply with a lawful order, which would be about the same difference as disorderly conduct. And that's basically what happened. So I don't think, you know, if they didn't have if they weren't wanted on an outstanding warrant or a summons or anything like that, like anyone else, then they could probably receive a court summons for that, if that's the law down there, which it's probably similar to New York. Because I don't think they went to, I think they were put in jail and they're still in jail. I don't think that's the case, unless they were wanted on a warrant for some reason, and then they have to answer for that, which is a separate issue. So it sucks for the cops, you know, puts in a catch-22 position. I think that the manager, which I believe the manager was either suspended or maybe fired at this point. That manager has some serious issues. As a matter of fact, I saw, and I don't know if you guys saw this, someone took another video in another Starbucks, I believe, where a young white man had come out of the bathroom and he didn't order anything yet. So what he did was he went up to the code to get into the bathroom, and they gave him the code. He went in, used the restroom, and then came out, and then he was going to go stand online to buy something. So there was an African-American man who basically, I guess, asked to do the same thing, and they refused to give him the code until he bought something. Ugh. Did you see that?
I didn't see this yet.
No.
It's floating around someplace. I saw it. I think it was on Facebook. Somebody had posted it. It's a completely separate incident in a Starbucks. So... Yeah, and this is, you know, and you know, listen, I'll be the first one to say that, unfortunately, some police officers are the biggest offenders, you know, where they let their own biases, racial biases and other biases, dictate how they conduct business with people in different communities. I have no problem saying that. There are 800,000 or 900,000 law enforcement officers in the United States. There's no way I would ever speak in absolutes to say there are no racist cops or no, you know, transphobic cops or no Islamophobic cops. There are.
Right.
And again, those biases affect the way they do their job. You know, I tried for almost 22 years to whatever biases I may have had in the past to not let that affect the way I went out and did my daily job. And you know what? It served me just fine for 22 years. I had zero complaints with thousands of interactions,
right,
and locking up a lot of bad guys. So it really, at the end of the day, and when I would train recruits, I would tell them, you know, life is full of choices. You, when you interact with someone, have one chance to make a first impression. And you have to choose to treat that person based on what they did and how they're treating you, and not based on what they look like, who they pray to, or who they sleep with.
Yeah. I mean,
at the end of it,
I wish that's what everyone heard, you know? Like, I wish that's what the... The cop agenda or whatever was the thing that was being broadcast to people. But there's something else I have to ask you about that's been really bothering me, and I can't find another side to the story yet online. You know, I don't know if you have anything. The Daniel Shaver shooting. I don't know if are you familiar with that one?
Refresh my memory.
He was in the, I think it was Arizona in Mesa. He was the person that came out of the hotel room.
Oh, yeah,
in
the hallway. In the hallway?
Yes, in the hallway. Like, usually, anytime one of these things happens, I always try to, like, look at one side. Like, always try to find, like, a bunch of information if we only saw a part of the video. The video that is out there is haunting. It is... Mm-hmm. It brings chills to anyone who's watched it. If anyone hasn't watched it, it's, you know, there's a guy coming out of a hotel room. We don't know too much. He's basically at one point begging for his life, and the guy is really, you know, intimidating him, and like, and maybe you can tell me otherwise, but you know, like almost like egging him on, like if you move, you're gonna die, and putting him under this pressure, and he seems completely unarmed. You know, hands above the head, and at one point he kind of like falls forward a little bit and is shot like several times.
He was pulling up his pants, and basically, right, as he was crawling, he had sweatpants, and the first thought is your pants falling down is to grab it, and that's when they pulled the shot.
Yeah. Now, one of my theories is that one of the reasons this isn't broadcast all over the place is because it happened to be a white guy on a white guy, so there's not like immediate media attention. We're not going to try to choose sides and get the media rockets going. But the other thing is, like, if you look into the background of this one officer, he seems he's had a lot of like anger things and whatnot. What I have to hear from you, what are your thoughts on this? Because this one really bothered me. A lot of them, like, they don't tell the pre-story, but this one, what is there a justification for this one?
No. The short answer is no. So I if I recall, the officer was charged with murder or second degree murder or something like that.
Yep.
And then if that's the same incident that I'm making up,
I'll look it up as you talk.
Trying to look up right now. After a 6-week trial, jury acquitted Brailsford of all charges.
Yeah, I know he acquitted, but was it second degree murder?
Faced up to 25 years in prison if found guilty of second degree murder.
Yep.
Right, but he was found not guilty.
Yes.
Yeah. He was acquitted.
Yeah. So. Right, they argued that the shooting was unjustified. I don't know if I don't remember if the police department, in their investigation, according to their department rules and regulations, found the shooting is justified or not. I don't call that part. I don't know if it says anything about that. But, I mean, for the reason that they were called there, right? They were called there that someone was pointing a gun at.
Yeah.
So if there's any marginal justification, one could argue that based on the reason that they believe they were being called there for, that if someone makes some sort of a furtive movement to their waist, which is where most, you know, guys will carry a gun, that the fact that they're there because of a man with a gun, and now this guy makes that movement, that's about the only marginal justification you could say, but which is, I believe, is what they were arguing about. But I don't were there other options that could have been taken there? Yeah, I think that whole scenario could have went down very differently.
That one gives me, we know we had a couple people at work around the water cooler, like chills, you know.
Yeah.
That one's so bad, and I wish, you know, that was a discussion. You know, it seems like that one gets swept under the rug a little bit, even though it was mainstream. It's not mainstream enough. Like, that's something we have to talk about, I think, anyway.
Well, I'm pretty sure. Usually, in a scenario like that, even though it happened out in Mesa, if I'm not mistaken, was that
right.
will the ripple effect from that will be felt throughout virtually every police department. In that, when officers go for their fire, which most departments do at least twice a year, at least NYPD does twice a year. To get recertified, that scenario will most likely be discussed, and or there'll be some version of some level of retraining when it comes to, you know, whether it be active shooter or pulling people out of a scenario to vet whether or not they're armed or not. I'm pretty sure that. I mean, the NYPD was always pretty good with knee-jerk training, in a sense that if any incident that occurred, whether it occurred within New York City or anywhere in the United States, or even sometimes overseas, that there would be some level of discussion about that incident in the next follow-up training that you would go to, because if it happened in Mesa, it could happen in New York. I mean, there's 500,000 hotels in New York, so why couldn't that have happened in New York City? So I'm sure they were talking about that pretty well. But yeah, it's a horrific thing to watch, and quite frankly, you know, that could be any of us.
Yep.
Yeah. What if that's me? Yeah. I could be in a hotel, and my sweatpants are falling down, and I do make the same move. I could be the same guy. So So I think that's important that. The fact that they didn't convict him of murder is not surprising to me, in that cops will say a lot of things, but what the intent is there, because police aren't trained to shoot to kill people,
right?
Unlike the military. That's a big misconception that, you know, police shoot to kill, right? And that's not generally the case when it comes to police training. In police training, unlike military training, in the military, you're trained to shoot to kill the enemy. In police training, you're trained to shoot to stop the threat of whatever is threatening you at that time.
I think my biggest problem with watching it is, like, I feel like the guy gave himself up, like, very early on, and he was almost like intimidated to move. Like, just move. Go ahead. Just move.
Yeah.
You're gonna get shot. You're gonna move. Like, I feel like he gave up instantly, you know, like he wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And it also looked like, I mean, to be honest, it looked like the cop had control of the situation, even. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I didn't see a reason why he couldn't go up and handcuff him.
Well, exactly. That's the discussion that we, let's say in law enforcement, we're having is to, there were points where he did have control, and there were points where, based on what he was saying, and then he would come back a second later and say something a little contradictory to, to what he was doing. So he would say, put your hands up, get down on the ground, it's like, so if you're, and you have to remember the emotional state of someone who has, a firearm, especially, a semiotic rifle pointed at them, they're going to be pretty, like shitting their pants. So they're going to be listening, but not really listening. And the officer, his adrenaline's running at 1,000 miles a minute. So you have two people who are, even though one of them is a, quote unquote, trained professional, when your adrenaline is running like that, the training generally does kick in. I've been in situations in shootings, and during those times of where people would be shitting the bed, that the training does kick in. It is kind of amazing how that all works. In this case, it looked as if that the training was mostly kicking in, but then it was something was getting lost in translation clearly, because the commands that he was giving this young man were making him act in such a way where it caused him to feel like he made whatever moves he did, which caused the officer to feel like he had no other choice but to shoot him. Now, again, you know, life is full of choices. So there was a lot, to me, it seemed very confusing. It was a lot going on and just in a few seconds time, which is usually the case. And, you know, and then once you fire, that's it. You can't take those bullets back and say, oh, shit, sorry, I didn't mean to do that. No, you'd like totally just, you know, maul this guy with lead. So, you know what? And the other factor to this, too, is that everyone is stressed. So, you know, someone else who may have come out into the hallway may have reacted differently. Another officer may have reacted differently. And I think you had a combination of two people who were acting and reacting, where it made this toxic soup of tragedy.
Good name for a metal band, though. Toxic soup of tragedy.
Yeah, right? Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Right? It's just, so I totally agree with you 100%. It is a frightening scenario to watch. I would say that law enforcement, hopefully, I'm pretty sure, without polling, you know, 800,000 or 900,000 cops, I would say that there's a good probability that that is being used as a case study for future trainings of police officers.
With a lot of like backlash that's going on between cops and African Americans. I mean, from what I'm hearing in arguments, a lot of people will try to say they're racist, and I hear from a lot of cop buddies, and I agree with them. They're saying, no, we're not racist. Do you feel, though, that they're going into it the second they see someone African American, that their fear kicks in, for lack of a better term? And do you feel we could do anything technology-wise to maybe calm down the situation? Like with the body cams, maybe have something with like face recognition or something, so we don't have the whole, well, he fit the description of something.
The problem with, see, the thing is, so this is what it is. When you're training police officers, when I was an academy instructor for a few years, and in the NYPD, we would get very large classes, right? We would get classes of anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 recruits every 6 months, because the police department is so large. And you have people coming in as young as 21 years of age, and sometimes as old as 40 years of age. Oh, now, the cutoff is 35, but if you have military experience, you could be as old as potentially 39, 40, 41 years of age. If you had, let's say, 6 years in the military, you add that on to your age cap of 35, and you're in. So you're talking about someone who has 2 to 3 to 4 decades of being socialized. Now, if your socialization process was such, like, you know, I had the luxury of, you know, being in a house where, while my parents were born and raised in Bushwick, Brooklyn, in a somewhat racist neighborhood, my parents didn't raise my sister and I that way. So anything that they learned and anything that we would hear from our racist relatives and grandparents, for that matter, especially on my father's side, was put quickly to death in our house, majorly by my mother. She was very affected by the death of Martin Luther King. So, and she really believed in a lot of what he was saying when he was alive and the way that people should treat one another. So she passed that on to us. So in the sense that we were basically to treat, that we were no better than anybody else, just because we were white. And throughout our lives, the way we were to conduct ourselves was to treat people based on how they were treating us and not on the color of their skin. And subsequently thereafter, you know, not based on their sexual orientation or their gender identity and so forth. Now, So with both cops, with training cops, you have to try to re-socialize people with 20, 30, 40 years of socialization in 6 months. And that's almost impossible to do. So you have to basically put it out to them at the end of the day that for the 8 or 10 or 12 hours that they're going to be in uniform representing the city of New York or the city of Chicago or anywhere else for that matter, that they are to speak and act based on what they were trained to do in that academy representing the city of New York or city of Chicago, city of Mesa or city of whatever. And any personal biases they have is just are not going to be tolerated. And they have to just go based on the law. They have to go based on the procedure and based basically on what they're dealing with in front of their face, regardless of what the person looks like. Now, having said that, do I think that there are some cops that react? Do I think that there's some white officers that may react in a certain way when they're dealing with someone who's of color, a person of color, you know, brown, black, or otherwise? Yes. Do I think that there are some black officers that may do that in reverse, you know, with someone who's white? Yes. Ironically, I've worked with a lot of brown and black officers that, and if I have the term correctly, I think it's still called horizontal hostility, where you have people of the same race who actually will not treat people of their own race in a professional manner because of whatever issues they have within that race. So whether it's white on white, black on black, and so forth. So, yeah, I think that that is out there. Absolutely, I think it's out there. Because we still live in a majority racist, sexist, homophobic society. Police officers are a byproduct of our overall society. And generally, when all else fails, you kind of look to your leaders for guidance. And I think when you have, in the current state that we're in, regardless of actual politics, when you have someone who at this point has clearly defined themselves as probably the most unprofessional president that we've ever had in our existence of our country, from my opinion, I think it might be a widely held opinion. I mean, that's kind of – a lot of this stuff is top down. It all – whatever kind of leaders you have, if they are kind of personifying – the very ills of our society that we've tried to break away from for 200 or 300 years, it's your gut is just going to kind of be like, wow, yeah, well if he does it and he's a president, I guess it's okay, right? And if you're working in a police department that's where that behavior is not put to death and reinforced with some sort of training and retraining to say, listen, regardless of who these people that we're serving look like, where they came from, or who they pray to, and who they sleep with, we're going to treat them as if, they were one of our family members.
I love that, little three-part mantra you have. I feel like that should be, something that's, almost like on the back of a card. They pray to, who they sleep with, and what was the other one?
Oh yeah, what they look like, who they pray to, who they sleep with, right? Yep.
It's brilliant. It really
it
is.
It kind of covers most of the bases, I think. At baseline, when you talk about the state of our country, the divided states of America that we live in, that's kind of really the three main ills that we have. And then if you want to toss in, some other things like Islamophobia, as a special cornerstone to the who you pray to part. I don't know if you get. Do you remember? As a sidebar, last week? I think it was. There was a story that came out of London, where it was punch, and I might be phrasing this incorrectly. I think it was. Punch a Muslim day or something like that.
Jesus, no, I didn't see this.
I also try
to block out most of news too, so I'm kind of the wrong person to talk to. But punch a Muslim day,
April 3rd.
Oh god.
Punish. I'm sorry. Punish. I said punch. I was mistaken. So last I think it was about a week or so ago. There was a day. It originated out of London, England, of all places. Where, well, I guess they have a large Muslim population now, but there was something that came out of there called Punish a Muslim Day, where the theme of the day was apparently, I guess, you seek out someone who you know is Muslim or think is Muslim, and then you punish them, whatever that means. I don't know what that was supposed to mean, right? So what happened was that anything that happens anywhere in the world will translate almost immediately, especially in New York City. So my former co-workers, especially those of the Muslim faith in the NYPD, were nervous because they have families too. So they were worried about what that meant for their wives and children at work or in school or in the street. There was a stepped up presence on behalf of the NYPD towards mosques or houses of worship in the of the Islamic faith. And where I am, I'm about 22 or 23 miles east of Manhattan. So I'm in Nassau County in Westbury, and we have a large Islamic center on the other side of town. So when I read this online, I was just almost immediately filled with anger and almost rage, in the sense that, because I know that we have a large Muslim population here in the town that I live in now, and I know a number of them, and I know them to be very nice, very professional, productive members of the community.
Just to be clear, you weren't angry that you couldn't punish a Muslim, right?
Right. No. I was angry at the thought that some.
It's ridiculous. Like, I'm sorry to make jokes, but it's so bad that I'm fuming here, listening to you saying it. Yeah. Like, I can't not say something. It's like my reaction to make things.
More palatable.
I don't know.
It was bizarre. I mean, if you Google Punish a Muslim Day, you'll see it. But so what happened was, to make a long story short, was that I contacted, I saw this, I was really bothered by it. And on that particular day, I had nothing going on. I had a completely clear schedule for the day. No appearances. I wasn't working. I wasn't doing anything. So, it was going to be a day of me sitting in my pajamas on Facebook fighting battles. So I contacted my
AKA Tuesday.
It was a normal Tuesday, basically, pretty much, almost like today. So I contacted the mayor of Westbury, where I live, and I said, "Hey, not to bother you, but who is the best contact person for me to reach out to at the Islamic Center?" I said, because I'm reading this stuff online, and I sent them a link to the a New York Daily News had posted an article about it, as a matter of fact. And I sent them a link to the article, and I said, because my knee-jerk reaction was that what I want to do is to go to the mosque, to the Islamic Center, and to meet with someone. To ask them if they need any assistance, if they want or would be comfortable with me visiting there throughout the day. I already knew and had heard that the Nassau County Police Department, which covers this area, was going to do that anyway. They were going to provide an additional uniformed presence and a check-in throughout the day to the Islamic Center to make sure everything was copacetic. I, being a resident, said, "Well, I have nothing on my agenda for the day, so I kind of feel that it would be a good faith effort or offer to say, listen, I would go and check on them, and I'm walking in there in plain clothes, so nobody's gonna know who I am." So if there was someone there looking to do something that for some nefarious reason, they're not going to do it when there's a marked police car outside, I would imagine. So I said, so during when the prayer services occur throughout the day, which is, you know, three or four different times throughout the day, that I would show up at that time and just kind of just hang out, you know, hang out for a little while and just be an extra set of eyes and ears. And if someone decided to walk in and start something, they would be met with some level of resistance, aside from everyone in the prayer service piling out to, you know, to defend the center. So so he did. He gave me the contact. I reached out to them. They reached back out to me, and they were totally grateful that that I, especially someone from outside of their faith, someone of the Christian faith, no less, and just an average citizen, was concerned about their well-being,
right,
enough to put myself basically, you know, in a line of fire, if, you know, hypothetically, to protect those who, you know,
were under fire,
coming in to pray.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who may be under, right, potentially under fire, yeah.
Right.
So now the interesting thing about this, you know, going back to Facebook, was that I put that out there on my Facebook page that that I was doing that, A, to notify, for a couple of reasons. One, to notify people in the area of this threat. And if they knew someone either in this area or other areas, whether it be in New York or maybe somewhere else, to kind of spread the word, to know, to kind of get their friends who happen to be of the Muslim faith a heads up if they hadn't heard this in the news yet. Just so really, first and foremost, as a heads up to everyone, period, but particularly those who are of the Muslim faith. And also to kind of... there are times where I have friends of mine on both sides, some of which are Muslim, who believe that those who are not Muslim are out to get them, and that they're constantly going to be under fire for the rest of their lives in this country because people who are of the Christian faith have this never-ending vengeance against them because of 9/11 or anything else for that matter. And then on the flip side, those who friends of mine who are of the Christian faith, who don't trust Muslim people as far as they could throw them, who believe that they're all ISIS and they're all 9/11 conspirators and so on and so forth. You know, and again, I don't like to speak in absolutes because I just won't do that. But my experience, having worked with people within the local community here, in the larger community in New York City, is that they've always been fine, professional, courteous, respectful, nice people to me personally. So yep. Other than I don't count people that did what they did on 9/11. I don't put them in the same category as those who are here as Americans who happen to preach, be of the Islamic faith. I don't put those two in the same category. The people that did what they did on 9/11 bastardized the Islamic faith for their own twisted, you know,
Wait, so
agenda.
you mean that when you meet a German guy, you don't automatically assume he was responsible for the Holocaust? You don't do that?
I'm only 60 years ago.
I do that. I mean, I do
well,
that.
Well, that's different.
Yeah.
No, that's different.
Right.
I do.
Yeah.
Especially if your name is Frankenfurter.
Tom. I want to say thank you so much for coming on. It's funny because I always build in, like, I'm like, well, Tom's coming on, so we'll just, you know, we can go for as long as we want because it's very
a good day and a half.
No, it's just very interesting to have you on, and like you're just a genuine dude, and it's fun to hear your perspective and hear, you know, you have a perspective that some of us don't have, you know, and don't get to have it. But you've also been on the media side, which we never really even mentioned that you do see the news side of it, but you've been on the street side of it. But you've also been on in the group that's been hated on and been oppressed for a long time. So you have a voice that should be heard. And I always say to you every time you come on the show, you should be having a podcast. You should be the one with a podcast. And, you know, it's good to have you on the show, and it's good to hear your voice and that you're doing well. So thank you for giving us a bunch of time. And where can people go to check you out?
Oh, they can go to they can get me on Twitter at Tom Verney, TOMVERNI. They could also, I guess, have to update my website a little bit, but it's TomVerney.com. And my blog, which also needs a little bit of a retooling, but they can see some of the older stuff I have on there, is called OffbeatCop.com.
Tom, always an absolute pleasure, man. And like I said, I could have you on like weekly for like a 20-minute spot every week. But thank you, man.
Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah. Awesome. On a side note, I looked it up. John Kasich was called 1 for 38 by Trump.
Oh.
As in, he only won one state. Not his best work.
I was going to say, he's got a lot better nicknames than that. That's where Trump is brilliant.
Yeah.
That's where that guy is brilliant, slapping
and
names on the people.
And that's why we don't like him. That one nickname is the only reason why I don't like him.
That's it. That's it.
Now, Donald, you must do better.
So Tom, thanks so much for coming on. And one more thing before we go. Now, this has nothing to do with anything we've talked about, but it's a debate that me and Mike have been trying to settle for a long time. We had two Hawaiians on the podcast last week, and I am a gigantic fan of Hawaiian pizza. Tom, what are your feelings as a New Yorker on Hawaiian pizza?
Now, is this pizza with pineapples on it?
Yeah, pineapple and ham, usually. Pineapple and bacon sometimes.
Okay. I can't say that I've ever had it. So
you live in New York. How have you not even tried that once?
Because I generally I'm very traditional when it comes to my pizza.
Swinging Mike's way.
Conservative.
All right. Yeah,
Mike's
so
very
real conservative when it comes to pizza. Grandma slice or cheese slice. Mm-hmm. That's usually. Yeah,
Mike's like the Putin of pizza, and I'm more of like the Bernie Sanders of pizza. I like to experiment. So again,
did you say he puts poo in his pizza?
Yeah, he probably does, but he's like the Vladimir Putin of pizza, very traditional.
Oh, Putin, yeah. Putin of pizza. Okay, my bad. I'm sorry. I thought you said he puts poo in his pizza. I was like, wow.
Well, he definitely does that too.
And that's still better than that Hawaiian stuff. I'm going to just say it now.
I think that's going to be our new trademark. We're going to ask every weirdo guest that we have on here, what's the deal? And we're just going to keep tallies. And you added nothing to that conversation, but you you added a lot to every other conversation, Tom. And
awesome.
You are always awesome to have on. And thanks so much, man.
Not a problem. Anytime. I appreciate it.
All right. Bro, the one and only Tom Verney.
He's so educated and well-versed. I would love to have him on a show with some of our quote-unquote other interesting guests, like Tom Verney and Lenny Dykstra.
like a March Madness of like normal topics where they have to talk, like where would have to debate Lenny Dykstra on something. No, I'm dead serious. That's a guy, every time he comes on, like I don't really need to say much. Like, he's so well thought out, and like, you know, I just try to guide questions because I want to hear what his thoughts are. And he's so smart. Like, that's a guy who should be in the cabinet of someone, or like an advisor to the president or something like that, because he has so much. He's so smart and well thought. He has so much pull in different ways, and is thoughtful of different things. Like, I just. You go from that and you talk to like your average idiot who's like so liberal or so conservative, and it makes you just want to be like, dude, just listen to this guy like for a little bit, and maybe some of your thoughts will change, and like maybe you'll relax a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you can totally see how he'll, even if he doesn't agree with the other side, he will understand the other side and try to explain it out and then give his point of view. But a lot of his views are so layered, it's like it's not just as simple as the left or the right. It's all right, let's dash a little bit of this with that and consider this and research that.
But,
I mean,
but isn't that the way life is, though? Like, I don't know how many issues, Berlow, that you are one way. Like, 100% one. Isn't that everything? Isn't everything layered? You know what I mean? Like, isn't everything like, well, I can see that and blah, blah, blah. Like, maybe you're one way about something, but I can't think of anything but my sports teams that I'm one way about. You know what I mean? Like I'm not one way about everything. Like, sometimes I also think, like, I hear people talk and how passionate they are about one side. I almost feel, like, stupid. Like, because I'm thinking, like, I don't feel that strongly about either side of this. Like, am I dumb? Like, am I not? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm very, like, laid back with my thought process on a lot of things where it's, I mean, some people even question, like, well, you're not passionate about stuff. It's like, I'm not saying I'm not passionate about things, but when I have an opinion on something, I don't go into it just with, like, utter anger and hate if somebody has a differing opinion on it. And it's just the way the thought process has to go. You can't just sit back and stand on your morals just because, even if you, like, grew up with a feeling, time's changing.
I just think he is consistently, you know, basically the most important guest we have on this show. You know, like we have guests that are really entertaining, but the message this guy brings is so well thought out and different. Like, even if you don't agree with him, I feel like that would be a guy that you're able to sit at a table with and be like, you know, like he really thinks this out, and he has opinions behind his, like, you know, I don't know. I just think,
I mean, off the top of my head, the only one that could consider off the top of my head to be on equal level, maybe Zoltan Esteban.
Right. Well, exactly. Like, kind of like well thought out. Yeah. But I hope to have Tom on, like I said, twice a year or something like that, where, like, he can just keep coming on, like, because there's always going to be news stories and stuff. Yeah, that Daniel Shaver killing is so atrocious and so, like, cold-blooded to me. Like, it gives me the chills, like, that story.
That's the ultimate form of bullying, where it's like, I got an advantage over you and you're going to listen to what I say, and I don't care that you're crying.
And that advantage is my gun, my weapon.
Yeah. The one that had, it said something like, you're fucked on it or something
Yep.
Engraved on it, so.
But I wanted to ask you something. Me and my brother were having a conversation in the car the other day. And we're listening to the music, and the music came on, and he's like, oh, man, like, that sounds like a real fat guy. And I said to him, like, you know, you can tell, you know, you could tell how someone sounds by if they're fat. And he said, absolutely. He said, I can nail, like, I could hear a voice and tell you if they're fat or not. Now, do you think that fat has a sound, like a certain, like, you can tell if it's a fat singer or not?
I would assume they have more of a baritone to them, but to actually have the ear to say, all right, that's a really fat person versus somebody skinny, I don't know if... I would like to have, like, 10 random songs played for him and him find, like, the four who are fat.
Well, it's funny. See, now you're thinking like a radio host. The reason I brought that up is because next week I want to put you, as long as I figure out this audio problem I'm going through. I've had this for 2 weeks now, but can't figure this out. I want to put you through what I call the fat voice. Okay.
Ah.
Yeah. Yep. So I'm going to give you 10 songs, and I want you to tell me who's fat and who's not. So my whole plan will be to try to trick you. If it's a fat person that you know, it won't be like a major hit. It'll be like a deep cut somewhere. So I want to try to prove, either see if my brother was wrong or if he was right, that you can prove that you can tell a fat voice from a skinny voice.
Now, do we have qualifications on who you consider fat? Is it a certain weight, or is it... Because I don't want that middle of the road, well, he's kind of chubby kind of deals.
Well, It's funny you say that, because like we were starting to say, like, you know, like, well, blah, 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 fat. And we'd be like, well, they're not fat. They're kind of chunky. You're just going to have to go with my judgment on this one.
All right. I'll live with
well, considering this show is me and you, and we don't really have a panel to give it to, we're just going to have
to... Tom Verney is back on the show this week, people.
Tom Verney, is Chubby Checker fat?
What? I'm on CNN. What the hell?
You heard me. But anyway, brother, you got anything before we go?
Well, I was going... Speaking of fat stuff, I was kind of looking back at... I was thinking back to some of the stuff that I used to eat as a child. And you ever have one of those foods that you ate when you were younger? You're like, how on earth did I enjoy that or whatever?
It's funny you say that. Well, you're going to find this funny. I've been feeling that I've been neglecting actual writing for a long time. Where like I'll be like, I write, but I'll like write a joke on stage or try a new line or something like that. And then I started watching I started watching, I've got like 6 points going on at once. Oh, yeah. I started watching the Gary Shandling documentary.
Okay.
Yeah. Fascinating. Really, really interesting. Gary Shandling, funny guy, unique guy. And he like wrote down like everything in his life. You know what I mean? Like wrote down like journals all day, even little thoughts. And I'm like, you know, why couldn't I do that? You know, like,
yeah,
like you will say you write, but you don't really write. You're not jotting down ideas.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, why can't I do it? So like even today I almost said Starbucks. I went to Barnes and Noble and like I bought a nice new notebook. Like I have all these old notebooks. I put a nice like here, I'll even show it to you in the camera. I put a nice like leather bound notebook, you know, like you know what I mean? Like and I spent like $29 on it. And I'm kinda like, whoa. Like I have to justify this. Like a cow died for the cover of this notebook, you know what I mean? Like it's like a leather bound notebook. But what I was trying to say, like...
I mean, paper, but Scott killed the cow for the fun of it.
Yeah. But it's funny you brought that up, because I was just writing a little thing about... I don't know how I survived. We grew up in that 80s, 90s era where, like, food... I don't know. It seemed like back in, like, the 60s and 70s, food was, like, a big thing, like, growing food. It seems like in the 80s and 90s, everything was mass-produced... And stuck in like a little package or stuck in a microwave dinner. And I grew up on like Little Debbie cakes, all these sweets. And I remember zebra cakes and Ecto Cooler and all these sweets that I would have every day. Now I don't even eat sweets. I don't even love them. I like ice cream. That's about it. But all these sweets every day. The Christmas trees, the... there were like green Christmas trees with like brownie on the inside. I don't even blame my parents. I think that's what was just going on during that time.
Yeah, and then you go a little bit into the 90s when we thought we figured stuff out, where they had like the fat-free craze and everybody's like, oh, I can eat all I want. It's fat-free. Meanwhile, there was 20,000 calories and everything and you're getting 10 times faster fat.
Yep. Yeah, where nutrition labels got pushed, right? Like, you have to actually put the amount that's in there.
I was just, like, looking over some stuff I used to enjoy and all. Like, I remember a snack that I used to love was mayonnaise on a piece of bread with pepper on it.
Oh.
That's it.
That's pretty bad. My worst was... I liked peanut butter and butter.
I've heard some do peanut butter and mayonnaise, and I don't get that.
I remember when I was a kid, I was heavily influenced by my like second cousins. Like they would do things, and I thought it was cool. And I remember they had peanut butter and butter sandwiches, and I tried.
That's what you considered cool? Wait a minute.
Dude, I grew up, I didn't grow up very like, you know, like that was kind of experimenting back then. You know?
And that's how I got into meth.
Yeah. And that's why I still, that's when I went to the methadone clinic.
Yeah. Started with peanut butter and butter, and, you know, we're like, ah, this is pretty good. Let's try this blue stuff out, you know?
Yeah, peanut butter and butter, man. I remember fried bologna sandwiches. I remember just a lot of little things in packages. I remember everything was in little packages and very sugary and sweet.
Yeah,
never mind the white bread and the processed meat. My lunch, my lunch now, as far as like the standards of eating, would be like, oh my god. And then like I remember kids, my like parents would give kids money in like middle school and high school to buy food, and they would go buy no actual food. It'd be French fries and the giant cookie, like the big the big cookie, and that was it. That was it. It was like a New Jersey staple of food.
Yeah, exactly, man. I mean, I was looking back. I remember enjoying Spam salad sandwiches. It's just like tuna. Well, you cut up the cubed ham or whatever you call that processed thing. You put it in a ton of mayonnaise and you throw it on a couple of sheets of white bread.
Loved
it as a kid.
Like our parents were very bad with food, which is weird because their parents were like from the 50s and 40s and that was where like a lot more food was local. I feel like we just lost it there for like 25 years and we're the product of that.
Exactly. I mean, the only thing they did was smoke a lot, but your food was pretty on par. I mean, maybe you could say a ton of fried stuff, but
yeah, but
I mean, it was actually chicken, you know?
Yeah, but even then it was just like a lot of stuff what like had to be locally grown because there wasn't mass refrigeration and mass GMOs and stuff like that. So when it came to our parents, they were just like, well, everything's in a box and everything is in a package and we can get dinner and ready in 4.5 minutes. You know what I mean? Like it just, I feel like they dropped the ball and we are definitely the problems that came from that. So I don't know.
Like I was trying to think of anything I remember as a kid that was disgusting, and I actually thought it was disgusting. And the only thing I could remember was there was you remember the Hostess pies?
Yeah, the ones that came in
like the cherry, apple, all that stuff. They also had like pudding pies, and they had this special promotion for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Where they called it the turtle pie, and all it was
a
custard pie. It was covered in like some green icing, and I don't know why it didn't taste any different than anything else, but something like didn't register in my head. Like it was just saying, "There's something really wrong with this," and I just remember being like horribly sick after eating like a half of a TMNT pie.
The worst I remember getting sick was from a Stewart's. In Virginia, and we were going down to North Carolina, and we had gotten a hamburger, and I'm eating it. I'm like, Dad, this don't taste right. And he's like, eat it, you know. And I like remember opening the burger, and it was green. It was a fucking green cheeseburger. The green cheeseburger. And like to this day, I really like. I know some people love Stewart's. It's just turned my stomach so bad that, like, I look at it, I'm like, ugh, green cheeseburgers.
I also remember, like, I went out with my brother's fiance at the time, and we went to McDonald's, and
the green cheeseburger of the family?
No, but she got chicken McNuggets, and it took forever. They kept on saying they were having some problem with, like, the fryer. And I remember she took it home and she's like, here, you can have one. And it was rubber. It was like pure rubber. I couldn't even like bite into it. It was like the grossest feeling. I never had another chicken McNugget for the rest of my life.
Yeah, man. And then there's some staples that stay. Like to me, peanut butter and jelly is still unbelievably delicious.
Oh, there's no stopping that. I mean, that's going to go on for years and years. Your great-grandchildren are going to be eating that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's just things that work because they are the best. Like, when you're young, you fall in love with pizza. If you don't like pizza, I basically have a problem with you. Like if you were like right. Scott, like I, you know, I like the podcast, I like comedy, I like Always Sunny and music and stuff, but I don't really like pizza. I'd be like, well, I don't know if we can make this thing work. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
It's like people who don't like dogs, weirdo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. I mean, it's God put us on this planet to eat peanut butter and jelly pizza and like dogs. That's it.
That's
all that other stuff was just side stuff.
That's a fine life for me.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's a scumbag's life for me. But anyway, bro, it's definitely time to get the hell out of here. What do you got?
I'm going to promote a brewery I went to just this last weekend. I'm really loving that place. It's called Red Brick Brewing Company. It's one of the oldest craft breweries in Georgia. Had some amazing beers there. My favorite was the Order of the Nine Gems, a great sour ale. It's a peanut butter sour ale, and it's just, it doesn't sound right, but it's something you have to taste. It was just phenomenal. They have 20 beers on tap. They have comedy nights once a month. They have trivia. People got to check it out there in Atlanta, Georgia, Red Brick Brewing Company.
Awesome. And I'm just going to promote next week the Verbal Shenanigans comedy show at Tap House 15. Chris Johnson, who opens up for the Impractical Jokers all over the country. In fact, just a week ago, he posted that Sal and Murr got caught. Their plane was down, and they had to travel by Uber for like 6 hours to get to the gig, and he had to do extra time. He had to do an extra like 30 minutes in front of like 17,000 people in an arena. So it was pretty cool. So Chris Johnson's headlining, Jackie Byrne, Josh Kincaid, and Andy McDermott. So that should be fun, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. And go listen to a bunch of the past episodes, guys. Other than that, thank you, Tom Verney. And let's get the hell out of here, Berlo.
Later.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? When you were 8 and you had bad traits, you go to school and learn the golden rule. So why are you acting like a bloody... You must get cool back.
All right. Stop recording.
Good stuff.